Warning. The views expressed on the Mike Cannon Show, or the segments brought to you on this indie media radio show do not necessarily reflect the views of WNRB nor WNRB's host.
This is my boomstick!
The Mike Cannon Show.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. And I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Welcome again to another edition of the Mike Cannon Show, indie media radio for Central Wisconsin.
Stand by to receive our transmission.
As you may know from the format of the show, I try to bring you information and shows produced on other not-for-profit community radio stations from all over the country and the world. Shows you can't get anywhere else except on this indie media radio program, The Mike Cannon Show. Before we begin, I'd like to give a quick shout-out to some of my listeners. Hey there to my new friend Diane, and hello to Bob, who normally only listens to that all-hate AM radio station here in Wausau. Bob, don't drink the Kool-Aid and keep walking towards the light. Speaking of the light, I got this email from a listener. Dear Mr. Cannon, I enjoy your show but find it very dark and gloom and all doom. Can't you find something on the sunnier side? It's signed Another Brick. Well, I guess that's a reference to Another Brick in the Wall, the Pink Floyd album. And no, you don't have to be just another brick. So sure, I can find something a little bit lighter. I found some funny left-leaning jokers on the web, which I'll bring you throughout the show today. Here's a short sample of one of the better jokers.
Hello, my name is Scooter, back from the dead. Back from the Alito hearings. Well, that was fun. Huh? Alito, I love it. I love it when the names match like that. Alito, you know. Wolfowitz. 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 My favorite was always Alien Gonzalez, though. That was always my favorite. Poor Alien, he had to give up Walmart for free health care. This is the Inner Side radio program. Stay tuned.
Got my tonsils out in Taiwan, my gallbladder out in Greece. Took a side trip up to Sweden to fill some caverns in my teeth. Saw a doctor down in Denmark and a specialist in Spain to see what could be causing me this dull but steady pain. Took a trip up to Toronto just to buy some little pills. Thought I'd died and gone to heaven when they handed me the bill. Went to Norway when I noticed that my eardrum had a hole. Got back home just in time to watch the Super Bowl. It's been a brutal year, but man, I'm glad I was overseas, where you can see the doctor when you really got a need. Where people, they live longer, babies also like they should. I guess they call it healthcare, and I guess they got it good. Broke my arm in Amarillo, went to Cyprus for a sling. Cut a callus off in Cuba, and they didn't charge a thing. Went to Britain for my itching, and to Iceland for my eyes. Irish intern pulled a hairball out of me to my surprise. Got a mole removed in Malta, stomach stapled up in France. After I began to notice that I couldn't zip my pants. Fixed a hernia in Hong Kong and my leg in Liechtenstein. When I got back to the U.S. I was feeling mighty fine. This here's a land of plenty, and plenty's what it takes to get some health insurance in these old United States. I just know I shouldn't have to go bankrupt or on the street if the cancer comes a-calling as it might for you or me. I ran into my congressman, said, "Your Honorable, would you mind taking 20 minutes, if you ever find the time, to figure out some health care that would work as good for me as what you fellas got yourself in Washington, D.C. So if you get appendicitis or a splinter in your hand, I hope you're in New Zealand, Libya, or Switzerland, or somewhere else where they have somehow figured out a way keep you upright till the good Lord says that it's your day.
Hey!
And now, the smallest giant in the business, Mike Cannon.
Hoped you liked that little interlude. Next, I'd like to show some light again and talk a little bit about what is happening in the gloomy New Orleans. Yeah, I know, for the most part, New Orleans has fallen off the media radar. But it's not for many of us, the volunteers who have visited down there, and it sure has not fallen off the front page of the minds of the people down there who had to suffer through that terrible tragedy and is now trying to rebuild their lives. As you may or may not have heard by now, the New Orleans City Planning Commission, made up almost entirely of developers who've been trying to get their greedy little hands on properties for a year, have come up with a plan that suggests that members of the communities most devastated, like the Lower Ninth Ward, have to get 5,000 fellow homeowners to sign on and come back into the communities. Otherwise, all their homes will be demolished. Now, ain't it funny and a little suspicious that still to this day the power is not running in the Ninth Ward, nor do they offer any other services in that community, and they have a dusk-to-dawn curfew. It is obvious to everyone down there that they don't want to bring back that community. Yet there are holdouts and at least one major group down there trying to support them. The Common Ground Collective has been helping Ninth Ward residents clean, mold remediation, debris removal, roofing, and free legal support to all Ninth Ward residents wanting to try to fight for their homes. Fighting against the rich land developers who keep licking their lips to take the land so they can widen the canal for bigger shipping interest. Frothing at the mouth of the developers to develop condos for the rich, while displacing mostly black lower-income folk. The following 10-minute segment produced by Black Box Radio will give you a little brief description of the continuing struggles of New Orleans residents and the efforts of the Common Ground Collective who are trying to support them. That 10-minute segment will be followed by a 5-minute montage of the interviews I got while volunteering at the Common Ground Collective. Lest we forget.
There can be no justice so long as laws are absolute. Even life itself is an exercise in exceptions.
The line must be drawn here.
Before Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans, the city's Lower Ninth Ward had one of the highest rates of black home ownership of anywhere in the U.S. Today, the future of this historic neighborhood is in jeopardy as the city of New Orleans is attempting to demolish these homes. Earlier this month, a lawsuit was filed against the city by the People's Hurricane Relief Fund, ACORN, and the Common Ground Collective to stop the city from bulldozing residents' homes. Brandon Darby of the Common Ground Collective has been fighting to save the Lower Ninth Ward neighborhood.
In the Lower Ninth Ward, the city of New Orleans has been trying to use eminent domain to take over about 14,000 homes, which encompasses the entire Lower Ninth Ward. Initially, they had around 6,000 that were scheduled to be bulldozed, and then they tried to compromise and said, okay, well, we'll just do 2,500 right now. And then ultimately, it went down to we'll just do 110 right now. And the lawyer said, no, there needs to be a hearing, and it can't be done without the notification of the homeowners and the private property owners, people from the community. So a press conference was scheduled, and everyone showed up, and the purpose of the conference was for residents of the Lower Ninth Ward to have a voice and to be able to speak to the media. And in the middle of the conference, a resident called my phone and told me that there was heavy equipment demolishing a home in the area against the court order. So immediately we showed up. Our attorneys were there. The media was there. The city attorney got on the phone and ultimately ordered all of the heavy equipment out of the area for the day. We at that point established patrols with video cameras to go around and to make sure that this wasn't happening and to document it if it was and look for equipment. And the city's excuse was that it was okay that they were demolishing because they weren't using a bulldozer to do it. So that's been the kind of tactics that the city is using to start demolishing homes.
Most of the people who lived in the Ninth Ward are now scattered across the country. Brandon Darby describes how these residents have been treated since the disaster.
They were made to get on buses, oftentimes without any say-so as to what bus they got onto, and they had armed men telling them, you know, to get on this bus and to shut up, and to get on that bus and to shut up. Family units got broken up, and the communities got broken up, and the neighbors that were together and had banded through this situation together got broken up, and many of them got sent to states as far away as Alaska, all over the country, at which time the government's done everything to keep them out of here. And the way that FEMA has responded to this disaster, they've intentionally kept services unavailable to residents in certain areas, which happen to correspond to the areas that the city has wanted to take over in the name of economic development. And the Lower Ninth Ward, there's a lot of money at stake, and the people that have the money, and that the people that have the interests here are definitely a lot more powerful, and they're not local interests. And that's made evident in the fact that they're able to dictate basically what the mainstream media on a national level is saying. They're able to dictate what FEMA does. They're able to dictate what the Homeland Security officers are doing. You know, you have the desire here for shipping, for an industrial canal to be expanded, which would change shipping and give greater profits to the shipping industry. So you can imagine the kind of money and the kind of people and the kind of corporations that have interest in taking this area from people.
There is strong, organized resistance to the city's plans. Residents and their supporters have made it clear that they are ready to fight for their rights and their homes.
What's been said very publicly to them is that if they come down here and demolish homes, that several residents have said that they'll have to pull them out in body bags and that they're not going to give up their home. And then several of the activists and organizers that are down here in solidarity, such as myself, have very openly said that if one resident wants to stay in their home, that we're going to stay in that home with them, and that we would put ourselves in between the structures, the people's homes, and the bulldozers. And so now what we're having is support groups going up in other states, and people are really organizing on a national level so that this can be opposed and so that the city can't take this community away.
One, two, three.
What this old house could talk, what story it would tell. It would tell about the good times and the bad times as well. It would tell about the love that lived and died inside these walls, and the sound of little footsteps running up and the hall. Oh, this old house of talk, it would break my heart in two. I couldn't stand to be reminded of all the things we used to do. There's no love in this old.
As the city of New Orleans attempts to demolish poor black neighborhoods, they are also attempting to shut poor people out of the city's redevelopment plans by drastically cutting down the amount of public housing available in New Orleans. Mike Howells is a New Orleans resident and a member of No Heat and the Hands Off Iberville Coalition.
Our understanding is that public housing fits in squarely with the repopulation of New Orleans. Most of the Section 8 housing that we had in this city was located in the Ninth Ward and East New Orleans, and those areas were heavily flooded, and the government has done little to nothing to reopen public housing. In fact, we believe that there were elements inside the government that were using Katrina as a pretext for closing down all public housing in New Orleans.
I asked Mike Howells how the campaign to demolish private residences in the Lower Ninth Ward fits in with the city's larger agenda for redevelopment.
Oh, it fits in perfectly. That's just part of the broader process of eliminating low-income housing. The homes in the Lower Ninth Ward tend to cost less than the homes in a lot of other neighborhoods. And by just demolishing that whole neighborhood, you eliminate another large surplus of affordable housing. So I see it's all part of the process of basically cleansing, engaging in ethnic and class cleansing, getting working-class African-Americans out of the city. The developers and the powers that be are taking the plans that they've used against public housing, and now they're using it against private housing. In fact, I'm absolutely certain of that, right? Because if you look at the Bring New Orleans Back plan, this is the mayor's rebuilding plan for the city that's caused such controversy recently. They talk about mixed-income neighborhoods. It's a joke. It's not promoting mixed income. It's kicking people out of the city. in reality, there's such a huge block of poor people in New Orleans that to create the kind of mixed income neighborhoods that they envision is basically to throw out huge, huge numbers of people in those neighborhoods. Without public housing, affordable housing is dead in New Orleans. People have to remember there's a spillover effect. But you've got a lot of public housing that helps keep private rents down, which helps explain why private developers are so hostile to public housing.
On Monday, the people of New Orleans held their annual MLK Day parade. This year, the event was especially significant, as marchers demanded the right to fair housing.
We're going to hold the MLK March to rebuild the Gulf Coast. And the reason we start in the Lower Ninth Ward is not just because of what's happened in the Lower Ninth Ward recently, but also because that is traditionally where the MLK parade started each year in this city. And the MLK parade was the largest annual gathering of African-American people in this city. We want to send the message that this is a tradition, it's going to be honored, and the neighborhoods that are part of this tradition are going to be incorporated into it. And yes, we have certain demands. One demand we have is no mortgage foreclosures or evictions. Secondly, we demand that all public housing be reopened or rebuilt. Thirdly, we demand that the government provide grants that pay for 100% of the rebuilding or renovation of all public or private housing in the city that's been devastated by Katrina. And we're also calling for the government to shift its funding from the war on Iraq to the Gulf Coast. So instead of spending money on destroying Iraq, the money can be spent on rebuilding New Orleans.
To stay updated about home demolitions in the Lower Ninth Ward, visit the Common Ground Collective's website at commongroundcollective.org. For more information and to stay updated on public housing in New Orleans, visit c3nola.org or the People's Hurricane Relief Fund website at communitylaborunited.net. I'm Megan Williamson for Black Box Radio. And with love we drove these nails. Take me in your arms and hold me, cause we've been apart too long. What does old house to talk? All it would say is welcome home.
As some of you may know, I went down to New Orleans recently and interviewed some residents and activists of that devastated area. I plugged into the Common Ground Collective, and you can check them out at commongroundrelief.org. That's commongroundrelief.org. They'll have this 5-minute montage of those interviews.
We're not just down here for a couple months. We're working here to make this into a permanent clinic here in the community that's run by community members and controlled by community members. And it's a long process, and it's going to take a lot of effort and a lot of money. So folks want to help out. This is a place to do it.
Of all the problems of racism and classism that were existing down here before, what happened down here was a whole series of human rights violations against people of the Gulf Coast perpetrated by the city, state, and federal governments in conjunction with many national and international-based relief organizations.
That lack of organization from the government and what they're kind of where they're falling through, what you've seen where they fall through at?
Well, from what I've seen, it seems to be very bureaucratic in terms of getting supplies to any of the relief centers. You have to be able to prove your ID of residency. You need to prove that you're from the area. Most people have lost most of the paperwork since Katrina and Rita hit, that they don't have the proper paperwork to provide to show that they're a resident. And without that, and you go to a federally run relief center, your chances of getting supplies are next to nothing.
It's a class war that's being waged down here, and that folks around the country have to remember that just because, you know, CNN or Fox News is saying, oh, all services are 100% open down here, that's a crock of shit. I mean, you walk around and is it, you know, 10 square block area, and you'll see that, you know, half to two-thirds of the businesses still aren't open. And it's a matter of blatant lies being perpetrated in, you know, against the people of New Orleans, saying, oh, they're all hunky-dory now with their whole neighborhoods that don't have power, that don't have water.
A friend of mine that works for Palestine Indy Media, that has been in Palestine for long periods of time, repeated visits, said that she felt like this was Palestine. Between the military checkpoints and the curfews that would change on a whim of the authorities, the curfews, you'd get a different answer whoever you asked, because there were no military, there were no police here, in some places for the first 3, 6 to 8 days, depending on what specific neighborhood and who you ask. There was none of that presence on the ground. And then as soon as the military was here, they were acting like the checkpoints were necessary to keep out looters. I was like, you missed the boat, you're too late, you're lying, you're hypocritical, you're just wrong.
It's really important that people get down here if they can. I mean, I know everyone's busy, I know everyone has a lot of things they need to do with their time, but this is a place where people are needed. I know that the Red Cross and FEMA are saying they don't need more bodies, and the reason that they're saying that is because they don't want people coming down here. They don't want people to know what they're doing. They don't want people to see the atrocities that are being committed every day. They don't want people to see the damage. They don't want people to really realize the war that's being waged right now, the war for New Orleans that's being fought.
I spent a long time researching who the owners were. I come back down here, and I'm told one of the women who wasn't at our meetings had been intimidated to force to give over her key, and her four children were out on the street, and she was crying. And we can't get in contact with that woman. We wish we could. So here we've got these landlords that are going around the law and certainly going around what's right and bullying, intimidating, bluffing people out. They've already got construction crews over here, contractors, all these things, and they're telling 75-year-old women that they might get hit by trucks. It's just, you know, veiled threats, and it's just unacceptable.
Around here, I look in an apartment, they say $1,000 for deposit, $1,000 for rent. I am a person clean houses. The people not come back yet. I know not have enough money for pay that apartments. Very expensive for me. I don't have place to go.
The need is still here, even in Algiers, where a lot of the community businesses aren't open, and it's 100 times fold that in huge swaths of this town, like in the 9th Ward, where almost nobody's back because there's no infrastructure set up there. So thanks again for all your efforts, and Common Ground's an awesome place, and I hope people get a chance to come down and check it out, and at least check out the website at commongroundrelief.org.
So if you're out there in Radio Land and you're hearing this, there are things that you can do. You know, if you're a carpenter, an electrician, or a mason, or you have any house building repair skills, you can go to New Orleans and you can do work. And even if you don't have any of those skills, you can go and pick up garbage and move debris and talk to people and sit down with them and listen to them. And you should contact Common Ground at commongroundrelief.org, and you should check out Community Labor United on the web, as well as the People's Institute for Survival and Beyond, and do a little research at New Orleans Indie Media and Katrina Indie Media. If you can't go down to New Orleans, that's great, because there's more stuff that needs to be done in the area that you're at. And the first thing you should do is start talking to people. Keep this on the front of your mind, because what's happening in New Orleans is a citywide plan to displace and to gentrify at an alarming rate. And it could happen in a city or a town near you, and it is happening there. And the other things that you can do are look around and find out where evacuees are. They're probably in your town. They're probably staying with friends or neighbors, and maybe they want to go home. And so thinking about and talking about with your friends and neighbors about what are ways to support the right of return and the right to remain. How can we create a fund that enables people to make choices? Maybe providing arrangements for their travel expenses as a way to help them go back to New Orleans. Maybe they're in Massachusetts and they don't want to be there. Maybe they want to be in Southern California. But giving people an option for what they want to do instead of just saying, okay, you know, it's the middle of November or it's December or it's January 1st and, you know, Katrina was 5 months ago, so therefore I don't have to think about it anymore. I I think that we need to keep this on the front of our minds and be able to provide options for folks who need them. You know, there's other things like understanding that this is an ecological event and there's a ton of environmental damage that's happened, and that environmental remediation needs to happen, and people who have legal skills need to be involved, and stories need to be collected. Cop watch needs to be done because police repression is very intense. For all these things that need to be done and that people need to be supported in these ways, they can be done from wherever you're at. And it's just important that we keep this at the forefront of our discourse on race and class and what's happening in America.
I'll do another press conference until the resources are in this city, and then come down to this city and stand with us when there are military trucks and troops that we can't even count. Don't tell me 40,000 people are coming here. They're not here. It's too doggone late. Now get off your asses and let's do something, and let's fix the biggest goddamn crisis in the history of this country.
Mr. President. Mr. President.
Yeah, Katrina hit N.O. when I was vacationing. People dying. It took a few days to take it in. Wasn't ready to leave yet. But to show that I cared, I cut it 2 days short and still wasn't there. Leader of the free world. But put the blame on a mayor who never had the resources to be prepared. Compare him to Giuliani. Question his leadership while I sit and do nothing to save this sinking ship. Play the politics. They need to ask for help instead of common sense. People left for death as simple as mobilizing food and water. I let days pass as Americans viewed in horror. Black faces pleading, thinking they've been abandoned, hacking through the attic, stranded, and couldn't understand that incompetence starts from the top and works its way down. You knew it when I was elected. Nothing left to say now.
George Bush doesn't care about black people.
Let's get the spin machine going. Label them refugees, make them less than citizens, so it ain't affecting me. Show the worst of the worst, globalize the looting, but don't show the dead bodies floating in the sewage. Don't show the mother searching for baby supplies, or the vast majority taking what they need so that they can survive. Cause I haven't sent them water or food, and seriously, in the midst of hopelessness, what's a father to do? Keep dehumanizing the survivors, talk up the lawlessness to keep my hide about the fire. Cause I could have sent troops, they not all in Iraq. Stop the foolishness, I ain't calling them back. I gotta make this a bipartisan issue. America's not ready to face race. It's much harder to get through. It'll be an easy sell, cause I'm not a racist. You never heard me use the word nigger in public places.
George Bush doesn't care about black people.
There is nothing happening, and they're feeding the public a line of bull, and it's spinning, and people are dying.
George Bush doesn't care about black people.
When Rehnquist died, I breathed a sigh of relief. One death in 5 days, not provided by me. Plus, I could change the subject, nominate a replacement faster than I can save the public. Hold a press conference, show that I'm displeased. Keep talking about the process instead of sending relief. I'm a busy man, that's for Homeland Security. It's FEMA's job, I gave them every opportunity. So they weren't qualified, well neither am I. And I've been president not once but twice. How can anyone be mad when you know I lied to your face and sent the troops to Baghdad? I got you to give me the Patriot Act. I got all the power I need to start invading Iraq, but not enough to save a dad or a mother or children, and definitely not no sisters or no brothers.
God who runs this building I'm in, emergency management, he's responsible for everything. His mother was trapped in Sacred Heart Nursing Home, and every day she called him and said, are you coming, son? Is somebody coming? And she said, yeah, mama, somebody's coming to get you. Somebody's coming to get you on Tuesday. Somebody's coming to get you on Wednesday. Somebody's coming to get you on Thursday. Somebody's coming to get you on Friday. And she drowned Friday night. She drowned Friday night.
Mr. President.
Nobody's coming to get us. Nobody's coming to get us.
The secretary has promised. Everybody's promised. They've had press conferences. I'm sick of the press conferences. For God's sakes, shut up and send us somebody.
This indie media radio programs are brought to you by The Mike Cannon Show on WNRB, Central Wisconsin's premier community radio station. And now, the man who doesn't belie pro-military rhetoric with cheap treatment of troops, Mike Cannon.
Coming up next, we are switching gears to the war in Iraq. We'll start out with a little humor, then go to this week's Iraq body count. That 3-minute This Week's Iraq Body Count will be followed by a 3-minute segment produced out of Palestine listing this week's Israeli war crimes. Again, thanks for listening to The Mike Cannon Show, indie media radio for Central Wisconsin, normally heard starting at 2 p.m. on Mondays, and now you can catch all our WNRB programming live off the web. You can go to the NTC website and find the link, or you can find the link to the live web stream link at our blog site at WNRB.blogspot.com. Again, thanks for listening.
This could be dangerous. You should go back.
We now go to the unwired tap news service of CCNN, the corporate communist news network. Later on today, lobbyist Jack Abramoff will plead guilty to fixing the election of the Pope. Abramoff will admit to bribing all the cardinals to vote for Pope Benedict by giving the cardinals free trips to a Boy Scout jamboree in North Dakota and lifetime passes to Disney World. With democracy now taking hold in Iraq, a new political party has formed, SBOI, Suicide Bombers of Iraq. At their first meeting, they decided they will blow themselves up after they vote. They also have branches in Bali, Sri Lanka, Pakistan, and a new one in London. They are also looking for new members. You can join by going to www.voteandblow.com. President Bush has sought out the advice of Henry Kissinger about the war in Iraq. Kissinger told him the only way to win the war in Iraq is to bomb and invade Iran. President Bush has blamed the deaths of the 12 coal miners in West Virginia on Al-Qaeda. The Bush administration has announced that Dick Clark will be the spokesperson for FEMA. We now go to the unbelievable. This never gets reported. The mainstream media will not cover this. The very, 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 very good news from Iraq with CCNN's Iraqi correspondent Abdullah Al-Bazan Ben Gazara Ali G. Bin Laden Saddam Hussein.
Thank you, Jimmy O'Connor. This is Abdullah Al-Bazan Ben Gazara with the good news from Iraq. Dateline Faris Hassan. Iraq's hottest story this week is the illicit trip to Baghdad by Florida teenager Faris Hassan. Referred to as Faris Hassan's day off, the 16-year-old's Middle East odyssey has sparked announcements of a slew of entertainment projects. Dueling Hollywood productions have been announced. The first starring Ben Stiller as Hassan and Barbara Streisand, superstar, and real-life dad Jerry Stiller slated to play his parents. The second production with J-Lo and LL Cool J as the parents, but rumors abound that Charlize Theron and Jennifer Aniston are fighting for the starring role, adding a cross-dressing Oscar nomination edge, and that a computer-generated Anthony Quinn will play the raving Saddam Hussein. The small screen has announced several new shows based on Hassan's story, such as Fear Factor Terrorist Brunch, where high school cheerleaders from America's heartland face terrifying questions such as, is that really avocado in that omelette? The Geeks and the Sheiks, who wants to be Iraq's next illicit teenage visitor? The Bachelorette Abu Ghraib Edition. And once again, Free Iraq proves itself to be the world's cutting-edge cultural leader. Dateline, Western Desert. It's a go for Crusade Land in 2006. Yes, the largest real estate and entertainment development in the history of Free Iraq has broken ground just west of the former Fallujah. Crusade Land will encompass thousands of acres and include a full-sized recreation of Jerusalem in the 1400s, featuring real-life Iraqis dying in staged mock battles against Saladin. The complex will include hundreds of thousands of square feet of retail space, a saltwater surfing pool the size of Rhode Island, and the largest Christian church in the world. Consenting adults will be able to enjoy the adult pleasures of Infidel Acres, which will include Jack Abramoff's Kickback Lounge, which is sure to be a hit with every visitor from Washington. A 50-story luxury condo tower will spell out the word Jesus when viewed from outer space. Michael Jackson will sponsor the Children's Crusade pageant, a recreation of the original Children's Crusade. Be sure not to miss the Children Sold into Slavery segment. Now let's go to the numbers. New Year predictions are for an active season. It looks like the sky's the limit with growth in all sectors. General explosions. This continues to be the dream index, outstretching the experts' wildest dreams. I'm sure that we all remember the donkey rocket era and how unsure we were of the future. Now to bring in 2006, three new indices have been created. Number one, funeral explosions. At the moment, this sector is off the hook and shows no sign of slowing down. Sure to be a real growth industry. Number two, police station explosions. Slow at first, but showing some real legs. Sure to sprint forward as we move through the fiscal year. Number three, market bombs. This old standard has proven itself to be a solid standby and continues to blow sky high. Days to full resumption of electrical power here in Baghdad. Once again, for the new year, we are suggesting investment in alternative power sources. Again, camel fat candles and woven goat hair wicks. And of course, all the ancient oil lamps looted from the archaeological museum. They are sure to accrue in value. Days to functioning sewer system and fresh water for Baghdad. Free enterprise experts are suggesting that every New Yorker can become an entrepreneur by turning on the tap, filling some bottles, and sending them to Iraq, COD. Anarchy Index has ballooned up to the unbelievable 99 to the 999th power, edging up again sharply from last month's 9 to the 98 to the 9th power, and certainly way up from the 0.000000001 of before the conflict. And this has been Abdullah El Paisan Ben Gazzara with the good news from Iraq. Thank you, CNN, CCNN. And thank you, CCCP. And a happy 2006 from all of us at the good news from Iraq.
What do all men with power want? More power.
Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
Now they knew who was master and leader. Sheep, thought I.
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
Remorse for what? You people have done everything in the world to me. Doesn't that give me equal right? I can do anything I want to you people at any time I want to, because that's what you've done to me. If you spit in my face and smack me in the mouth and throw me in solitary confinement for nothing, what do you think's gonna happen when I get out of here? Well, I haven't done enough. I might be ashamed of that for not doing enough. For not doing enough. For not being more perceptive. For not being aware enough. For not being scared. For being stupid. Maybe I should have killed 400 or 500 people, then I would have felt better. Then I felt like I really offered society something. You've got it stuck in your brain that I must have done that.
What do you want to call me a murderer for? I've never killed anyone. I don't mean to kill anyone. Think it. I had it here.
I don't. I don't pretend it was a town or anything fancy. I can, but I find more real in the world that I'm in than I do the tinsel. And the real world is the one I have to deal with every day. The
believe me, if I started murdering people, they could not get left.
Chemical weapons threat. Terrorists dangerous die.
There are some who feel like that, you know, the conditions are such that they can attack us there. My answer is bring them on.
As of Monday, January 23, 2006, 2,224 United States military personnel had died in Iraq since the start of the invasion. 16,155 United States military personnel had been wounded in Iraq, over 5,000 of which had suffered major injuries such as amputations.
Join us or die.
According to the British medical journal Lancet, over 100,000 Iraqi civilians had died since the start of the invasion.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
What do you see when you're in the dark and the demons come?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am a member of the interim Iraqi government. I'm sure you heard that our recent elections went very well. Of course, there were a surprisingly large number of votes for Pat Buchanan, but that's neither here nor there. Everything was fine. And my first official action, of course, was to go and have my state-sponsored physical. The doctor performed some tests and told me I have 6 months to live. And I told him, woohoo! You know, 6 months. I mean, it's a lot longer than most people in the Iraqi government can look forward to, so I've got that going for me. Anyway, tonight I'm here in my capacity as the Iraqi Minister for Tourism. And in an effort to bring more Americans to our lovely country, I've decided to do away with our old slogan, which was, death to the great Satan! In favor of something more family-friendly and hip in what's happening, like what happens in Fallujah stays in Fallujah. Perhaps it would sound better in a song. Won't you come and tour Iraq? See the land that's so Islami. Life can be so sweet on the sunny side of Tikrit. If you hear a loud attack, we'll just say the weather's balmy. Maybe we should meet on the Sunni side of the street. Let's all go walking at noon, where the streets are all strewn like a Flintstones cartoon. We've trouble with rubble. Maybe soon we'll have some luck and things won't be so Saddam-y. Our state bird is the duck. On the sunny side, better run inside, get my gun and hide in Tikrit. You all come back now, you hear?
You know you only had one shot to make it right, to do the right thing, so listen to the Mike Cannon Show.
This is a summary of Israeli war crimes committed in Palestine for the week ending 18 January 2006. Israeli occupation forces escalate attacks on Palestinian civilians and property in occupied Palestine. Four Palestinians, including a woman and her son, were killed by Israeli occupation forces in the West Bank. One of the victims was extrajudicially executed by Israeli occupation forces in Jenin. 18 Palestinian civilians, including 10 children, were wounded by Israeli occupation forces. Israeli occupation forces conducted 54 incursions into Palestinian communities in the West Bank. Homes were raided and 94 Palestinian civilians, including 11 children, were arrested and tortured by Israeli occupation forces. Six homes and a shop were transformed by Israeli occupation forces into military sites. An Israeli occupation force dog bit an elderly woman in Kfar al-Dik village near Nablus. Israeli occupation forces have continued to impose a total siege in occupied Palestine and have imposed severe restrictions on the movement of Palestinian civilians and election candidates in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. Israeli occupation forces have obstructed the election campaign in East Jerusalem and have arrested 13 candidates and volunteers of election campaigns. Israeli occupation forces have imposed a partial closure on the Gaza Strip and arrested five Palestinian civilians at checkpoints in the West Bank. Israeli occupation forces have continued to construct the annexation or apartheid wall in the West Bank. And finally, Israeli settlers have continued to attack and brutalize Palestinian civilians and property in occupied Palestine. Israeli settlers attacked Palestinian civilians and property in Hebron. They uprooted 120 olive trees in Yad village. They seized at least 150 dunams of land in the Dura village. And Israeli occupation forces have demolished five homes in the last week. For a more complete and full report of these gross human rights violations, you can go to www.pchr.gaz.
Hey there, sexy. Have you come to play? That's right, big boy. Enjoy the Mike Cannon Show.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Mike Cannon Show, Indie Media Radio for Central Wisconsin. You know, we all have that relative. You know, the one who's pretty much a nice guy, but somehow, for some unknown reason, just can't quite get that some aspect of his life quite correct. Maybe they're on that third divorce now. You've heard the stories a lot about how bad she was to him, and it seemed reasonable at the time. And of course you're going to take his side of the story. He's your relative. But then after the second and then maybe the third time, the story he tells starts to kind of repeat. And though by every account he seems to be a nice guy, a pattern emerges. Perhaps you have that relative that always seems to be leaving jobs. You know, we all had shitty bosses, so when he told you that his boss was an ass, you could relate to that. After all, we've had bad bosses, and he's your relative, and in every other way seems to be a nice guy. But a pattern emerges, and it seems that every once in a while he'll leave his job, and it always seems to be someone else's fault. You can't put your finger on it, but something about that otherwise normal and nice relative seems to be off. Yet you stick by him because he is your relative. Well, recognizing patterns of life is a sign of maturity. And one pattern by now we all should be realizing is that our government, though they seem to be well-informed and meaning at the time, just can't get overseas interventions correct. And they try and they try. But in the end, the track record suggests that every time we intervene in another government's affairs, we just can't quite get it right. We still love our relatives and we still love our country, but the pattern is emerging. This has been glaringly obvious if you follow the U.S. interventions in South America. And now it looks like a typical pattern is once again emerging. The vilification of Hugo Chavez in Argentina is starting. The right-wing hacks on the AM dial are vilifying him. Why? Because he's doing things that are scary to us. He's showing the world that you can use your resources more wisely and the profits can be used to benefit the people, not just the pocketbooks of oil executives. He's doing things like giving free eye surgery to all Central America people, paying for the flights to the doctors, the hotel stays for all the people with cataracts, some estimated 5 million who are suffering from it. President Chavez has also helped the 5th U.S. state with reduced heating fuel oil for the poor. The Cisco gas company he runs is giving 40% discount to poor people now in the 5th U.S. state. Are the American gas companies offering to pay for eye surgery to millions or supplying gas to any of the America poor? The answer, of course, is no, they're not. And that's why he's so dangerous. So the vilification is beginning, especially since yet another Central America country, Bolivia, has elected a Chavez-like character to their country's presidency, too. Many corporate executives are now running scared, and that's why you hear Hannity and Rush and their ilk vilifying them. We've done this before, time and time again in Central America. This time, people, let's stay informed. My next show I'll bring you is a segment out of Canada who is doing reporting about Haiti. Haiti being yet another example of the country the U.S. just can't seem to keep its paws off. So America, please keep your stinking hands off Central America. Here's that report.
Good morning and welcome to Friday Morning After on CKUT Radio in Montreal, Quebec. I'm Joe Broadhurst and I am happy to be joined on the line with Aaron Lakoff, who is a CKUT reporter currently in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, and covering the build-up to the elections on February 7th. Mr. Aaron Lakoff, how are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Yeah?
Thanks for having me on.
So tell us a little bit about what's going on down there. We had spoken by email yesterday, and you had said something about a hospital being fired upon.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll give a bit of a backgrounder about what's been happening in Haiti the last few weeks, just so people have an idea of the kind of general political situation. As people may know, there's been a pretty rocky lead-up, we could say, to presidential elections that were supposed to take place actually quite some time ago, months ago here in Haiti, but have been delayed now four times, and the most recent delay taking place on January the 8th. But it looks almost for sure now that these elections will go ahead on February the 7th, and that will be the first round, the second round taking place mid-March. Of course, these elections come after a coup d'etat, February 2004, sponsored by the U.S., France, and Canada, which ousted democratically elected President Jean-Bertrand Aristide. So what we've seen in the lead-up to these elections is a climate of intense fear and political violence in Haiti. And this violence, despite what you're hearing in mainstream media reports, is more often than not coming from the political elite in Haiti via the UN forces that are now here, what we call MINUSTA, which is the United Nations Stabilization Mission in Haiti, towards and against the nation's poorest, which are, which make up 90% of the population of Haiti. We're talking about a population that lives off $200 per year, $200 per year. And it's the poor in Haiti who have also traditionally been the support base for the Lavalas Party and René Préval, who's running as presidential candidate for Lavalas. So as you can see, this huge base of poor people in Haiti is actually representing quite a threat to the nation's wealthiest, who would like to see their business interests protected. So basically, I arrived in Haiti on January the 4th. On January the 7th, people may have heard that the Brazilian head of the military mission here, General Bacelar, was found dead in his hotel room. The UN is saying it was a suicide. Some people speculate quite differently, because what we do know, sources have told us that the night before his death, Bacelar was in a very intense meeting with Andy Appeared, who is the spokesperson for the Group of 184. The Group of 184, of course, being a group of 184 so-called civil society groups, but mostly composed of wealthy businessmen and sweatshop owners like Andy Appeared, who led the coup in 2004. Anyways, Bacelar had a meeting with Appeared and Regina Boulous, who is the head of the Haitian Chamber of Commerce, and they basically told him, you need to crack down on Cité Soleil, on the poor areas, or your job is on the line. So we think it seems like he may have died under pretty sketchy circumstances, to say the least. Then, of course, last January the 9th, the Group of 184 called for a general business strike throughout the country, again to put pressure on MINUSTA to increase security measures. And of course, what we've been seeing is that, increased security measures are acting as a code word or a cover to simply, again, crack down and to increase the violence in the poor areas of the city. And then most recently, on January the 16th, which was just this past Monday, the Group of 184 also led a demonstration outside the UN office here in Port-au-Prince. So it's very clear that Haiti's elite are very unhappy with MINUSTA's performance. But then if you look at the flip side, MINUSTA have been responding to the pressure of the elite and have been upping the bloodshed in the slums of the nation's capital. So the same day that we had the demonstration outside the UN office, four people were killed in Cité Soleil. Also, two Jordanian UN troops were also killed that day, and now many in Cité Soleil are fearing reprisals because of that. And then most recently, yesterday morning, three more were killed That brings the death toll for just this week in Cité Soleil to above 10. One of the men who was killed yesterday morning was, he was very young, he was 22 years old. Another one of the men who was killed was a delivery man. His dead body was strewn next to his cart that he used to deliver merchandise to different small shops in Cité Soleil. So this is the kind of bloodshed we're seeing. This is the death that's coming at the hands of MINUSTAH here. And then the hospital incident, which I feel is very important to mention, because I don't think that that's going to get covered at all in the mainstream press. We visited a hospital in Cité Soleil yesterday called St. Catherine's Hospital, which at about 11 p.m. on Wednesday night came under heavy fire. And eyewitnesses say that it was indeed MINUSTAH who was shooting at the hospital. And, of course, what we could see from the hospital balcony was that the only place, really, in Cité Soleil where you could have had the range to get, you know, those shots fired on the hospital was from the large building that MINUSTAH is occupying in Cité Soleil. And, I mean, it was a frightening sight, this hospital. The outside walls were just riddled with bullet holes.
Do you know who the target was? Or was there anybody inside that would have been a target?
We can't really say for sure. I mean, what I do know is that we spoke to eyewitnesses who saw MINUSTAH firing. I can't speculate at this point in terms of their intentions or what their target was. But we were walking around the inside of the hospital, and there were bullet holes in the children's ward. So if that says anything about the targets, we have to kind of, again, question what MINUSTAH is doing in Cité Soleil if they're shooting into the children's ward of a hospital. Luckily, no one was injured or killed in that incident, but it's always frightening to see bullet holes in a hospital. And of course, that's also a serious war crime under the Geneva Conventions. It says very clearly that, you know, you don't open fire on a hospital, and that hospitals have to, you know, remain safe areas in a time of war.
Well,
and another interesting thing I think to note about the UN is they're very image conscious right now. There was recently an admission on the part of the UN in the Independent in the United Kingdom, where the UN have now admitted themselves that they've probably killed some civilians, what they term to be collateral damage. And more and more that their role here in Haiti is being questioned, not only by the elite, but also by the poor. And what happened yesterday was when we were driving into Cité Soleil, we were in a car that was clearly marked as a press van, and a MINUSTAH tank stopped us, wouldn't let us go any further, had their guns trained on us. And then as soon as I got out of the car to start taking photos, they started their sirens. They're trying to get me to stop taking photos. So I think these are clear attempts on their part to try to silence the press, specifically silence the press that's going to cover them from a negative angle.
In the mainstream press, they had run an article yesterday that was talking about a Chilean brigadier general who was named to be the vice commander down there for MINUSTAH. Do you know anything about him? They said that he was actually blamed for a Spanish diplomat's death and that he worked under Pinochet. Do you know anything about him?
Yeah, what I do know, you're talking about General Herman. He took over from Bacelar after his death. And indeed, Herman has been linked to the Pinochet regime. He served as a military commander under Pinochet, and he was also trained at the School of the Americas, the infamous School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia, where numerous death squad leaders, where people like the FRAP here in Haiti, paramilitaries, have been trained for decades. So he comes to power with a kind of American stamp of approval on him as well. And, I mean, this is certainly not looking good. In fact, this has gotten out in the press that he has been linked to the Pinochet regime. I believe there's even an article in Montreal's La Presse about it. And in fact, Herman is now second in command, actually. They just appointed a new head of the military mission just the other day, a Brazilian by the name of Cal Valerio. So, but again, I mean, it goes to show you the kind of people that